sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
And I'm Johnny, and I feel so much better. I'm not sick from last week anymore. Totally not. It's been an hour.
Yeah. We are not recording two shows back to back.
Nope.
Why? Nobody would do this. Yeah. No sane person would record two episodes back to back. But welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing Tigers Are Not Afraid. As always, John, give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, John and I will mosey on over or shuffle over to the TV corner. And we are reviewing episode 3 of Ju-on Origins.
Entitled.
What is it titled?
If you thought you were confused before, get a load of this episode 3.
We got more characters to add. Yes, episode 3.
You remember these characters? Well, good. It's okay. Don't worry about it. They're not going to show up.
Yeah. Okay, so the previous episode was kind of like an origins of the girl who was raped in the house. And we go up a few years according to this, 1994, which sure, and they are older, still together, but now have a son, and we can assume the son is haunted by,
and the son is probably roughly 6 years old, right? Because that incident happened in 88.
Five.
I did the math wrong. I forgot it was 94. It's because not like I've seen other episodes by accident, but something takes place a year later from that point, so I got confused.
Okay. Yeah, so now they've changed their identities, are married, have a five-year-old son, but of course the husband somehow was blackmailed to be in this relationship, so he's like abusive, has a dead-end job where his boss sort of berates him.
His boss gives him the biz all the time.
Yeah. He just wants to be riffing on girls, but he's getting the biz from the boss. But he's abusing his wife, he's abusing his son, which we introduce another character here, the child protection agent. And we return to, I think, the most interesting character in this show, which is the woman with the fiance, and the paranormal writer.
Yes.
It was mentioned in the last episode that her fiance's mother is like a psychic, so they do a seance together to find out the location. They're trying to figure out the location of the cursed house. And they were able to, a really cool scene where they were able to like spot it on a map. The map goes like dark somewhere on a map or something.
Oh, yes.
And she visits the house when there's another couple there. So we're introduced to another group of characters. Their whole... Quickly, I'll describe their storyline. There's a pregnant woman. She is having an affair with whoever the husband that's living at the house. But her husband is actually aware of it, is following them. And yes, that's kind of where we're left after this episode.
So I'm wondering what happens to them later. I have no clue. personally.
Only good things, I imagine.
So. And it's like the wife of the guy who's being the doing the infidelities. I can only imagine instigating the whole thing.
It's his, we can assume it's his child, not the husband that's being cheated on. Yeah.
But the other wife, you don't get a whole lot of screen time with her. She just kind of is there. And it made me believe that they're rich, maybe, right? Because they live in a house, like a big one, or...
It's implied that they're probably well off, yes. They're not, like, living in a squalor like our other characters.
So. I mean, like, homeboy is like, oh, goodbye, don't wait up for me because I got to do stuff. Like, classic, I'm going to cheat on you line, right? And then gets on a train, hops off the train, and immediately meets his new pregnant girlfriend for, like, lunch or whatever.
Right.
Or breakfast, I'm not even sure.
Brunch.
Brunch, yeah. It's very good. So yeah, that's their thing. But I feel like a gist of the episode is what Kiyomi, and it's so tough.
Yes, Kiyomi.
Again, we're not familiar with these names, right? And then I try to look at the IMDb of like the character list and the actors that play him, and there's no character named Kiyomi. So I'm assuming that's her nickname, and I'm like, I have no idea. I'm very confused.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, her life has kind of turned to shit.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, even though, so, but she's cursed.
Yeah.
To be fair, she's cursed. Yeah.
Even though she forced all this on this guy because she got pregnant.
I think we could assume that it's the curse, the ghost that is like living vicariously through her, is the what I'm gathering. This isn't really her. It's like a split personality thing. Because she was acting super weird after the fact.
Yeah.
After.
So where does the storyline come in with...
The grudge? What grudge does she have?
No, like, because wasn't she the girl that allegedly had seduced her father? Or is that a different character?
No, that's accurate, but I mean, it seems to be proven false because she was a virgin, right?
Yeah, sure.
Because I believe that her raper, now husband, said that she, you're bleeding, you're a virgin. Yeah, ugh, gross. He's like, gross. So, there's blood, unless he was just like too rough with her, but so I think it's...
That's her thing, I guess, like she's always had a shitty life. It's confusing because the grudge thing, that's not how that works in the movies or in the lore. It's not like they can possess bodies or...
Yeah, but this is the origins, John. It's true. It's true. This is the real story. The movies were just fucking Hollywood invention. This is the real fucking thing.
Or the Japanese equivalent of Hollywood, whatever that is. I don't know. There was a name for it.
Japantown?
No, there was a name for all the Japanese horror movies that came out at the same time. There was a... Shit, it was like a popular name.
I don't know.
Man.
Do you want to look that up real quick?
While you explain what's going on. I'm not going to be any help with that, to be honest.
I think that the character we're talking about is very tragic, and that like she's older, she has a terrible life, but she's clearly cursed too, and her son seems to be cursed as well. She's in the early scene, she could tell that there's a ghost he can see that's kind of like present, that he's aware of, and he sort of has these persistent issues, and he becomes kind of like vegetative at some point, which is why he gets taken to the hospital and everything. And his dad is very like abusive and hits him with the phone at some point. So, but there's always like this inkling that like there's something more to the kid. Like the kid isn't like in any shape way like a normal kid. He's definitely also cursed because of his mom.
He's also, for the most part, like, seems catatonic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was called J-Horror. I don't know.
Oh,
I
don't yeah, get too okay.
Off topic, but all these movies, like fucking Pulse was one and nobody knew that. Mm-hmm. Dark Water, Shudder. All of these movies, yeah. And everybody just thought they were crappy American J-horror. Movies. And like, nope.
Most of
like
them a, were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like Pulse was really bad. One Missed Call was also a J-horror movie.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah.
That's a remake of One Missed Call from the 80s, isn't it?
Oh. I
just say yes.
What you're saying, but it is a part of the massive list.
That's weird. One Missed Call. Because there's a that's famously, I think One Missed Call is the one where the call's coming from inside the house. Because there's a...
No, that's when a stranger calls.
Oh, good call. Thank you.
Carol Kane. Yeah.
Thank you. How dare I? Excuse me. I'll show myself out. I'm leaving Carol the TV Kane corner. And, I'll wait for you in the main review, John. Just go ahead and wrap up.
No, yeah. One Missed Call was a J-horror movie that came out. And then the remake, the only reason I like it is because of Shannon Sossaman.
Okay. That I didn't know. One Missed Call.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
is it also called One Missed Call in Japanese?
Yes. I mean, I mean, I'm sure it translates to that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the Ring was a monster hit, and then they did The Grudge was also a monster hit. And so, like, they just remade all of these recent J-horror movies in the early aughts.
Oh, my God. And it was literally within, like, 6 months of something. It almost seemed like they were getting advanced copies of these movies just to make them already.
Yeah, we would get at least two a year for something like that. It was pretty... They were definitely trying to just cash in on the success of Ring. But if you go back and look, I mean, Naomi Watts is in it. Gore Verbinski directed it. It's kind of like, yeah. Come on, dude. These are like now proven, you know, talents. So... Yeah. I think they got lucky with that remake.
With the big ones, yeah. I mean, because like classic Hollywood, I think what they did was they put it all their eggs in like the one basket, which was The Grudge and The Ring. You know, The Ring was a little bit better in my opinion.
I agree.
And then, but it wasn't like The Grudge was bad. And then they kind of blew their load and all those, and then they're like, let's just start shitting out remakes of other movies real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was like a, for the people that don't know, there was like a fad of J-horror remakes, which is what we're talking about. Yeah, it was pretty, a little rough.
And for the people that also don't know, if you go back in our catalog, you will see that we reviewed the classic I forgot what they're called.
What is it,
Shit.
What is it, John?
The Ring versus The Grudge, but I forgot what the characters' names are.
Yeah, the two main antagonists of those movies fight each other. Yes. So, yeah.
In a very, very serious movie. It was very serious.
Very serious. Very good. Nice gem. I was unaware of this was happening, to be honest. So, yeah, it was fun to go back and revisit that movie and watch it. It
if you good. Like Freddy versus Jason...
I
and you don't want all the racism. You can watch
the Japanese movie was the superior versus movie. To be honest, much more fun than Freddy versus Jason, which we also reviewed.
We did.
So as part of our nightmare, too. Yeah, our nightmare retrospective we did. So yeah,
that's Ju-on Origin. So now they have.
So what did we talk about?
So many. They have so many stories to make movies about now. They have at least 60 per episode.
I think that. Yeah, I think we're both enjoying it, but we're a little confused about what is. It's like certain stories are moving at a snail's pace. Others, there's constantly new stories being introduced. Like we haven't even come back to the two girls disappearing that were part of the rape, or we haven't even touched upon again the man who who pulled over and slapped the kid. So we're kind of like, we're kind of just like throwing. I mean, I mean, we only got like 3 episodes left, and I feel like we're not gonna get solid resolution to those storylines. Yeah, that you've already seen all of them already. So
I guess I've only got 2 left. Yeah, I hope I don't forget and I watch the next one because I'm still in like a sickly haze. But like,
what? Yeah, it's so.
I'm gonna be like, we're done with the series. What are you talking about?
We're done. Let's move on.
Had a killer ending. You don't remember? No.
There's a 7th episode.
Remember, it's an American moves to Japan and Sarah Michelle Gellar. Like, what?
That would be killer if Sarah Michelle Gellar just shows up, walks up to the house.
Who played the guy that kills his family? Was it Rory Cochrane? I want to say it was, but I'm probably wrong about that.
That sounds correct. Right. He married a Japanese woman. I think it is Rory Cochrane. I think, yeah. It's a good call. Yeah.
Which came out in 2004. I don't know. I think of that movie coming out a lot earlier than that.
No, I don't know. No, yeah, 2004 makes sense. Because I felt like The Ring was...
I think it was Bill Pullman, not Rory Cochran. Damn, we were completely off.
Yeah, I just went along with you, but yeah. Is it Bill Pullman?
Yeah, it's Bill Pullman. He's the one that kills his wife. And
okay, fair enough. Rory Cochran, Bill Pullman. I mean, come on.
Interchangeable.
Interchangeable, those two guys.
One guy played the president, one guy played a stoner in a movie, you know.
Both iconic roles.
Okay, well.
Okay, Juwan Origins. Let's continue. Not bad.
Yeah, again, not a bad show. Just very confused.
Yeah. Okay, let's move over to our main review of Tigers Are Not Afraid. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Tigers Are Not Afraid. It's a hard knock life. Was that insensitive to orphans? Sorry.
We're going to get sued by Jay-Z.
Oh, shit. Or, no. I'm pretty sure that plays in public domain now, right? What's the name of the play?
Annie?
Yeah.
Little Orphan Annie?
I think it's old enough now.
You think so?
It is. We are in the 2020s, and that came out in,
1900?
Yeah. For sure.
You think it's free domain? You think the Annie story is free domain? I don't think so.
You're probably right. They probably rebought the thing 1,000 times. Oh, 82. So, yeah, there's still time.
But to be fair, that's the movie. What about the play?
That's the movie. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. The play was the... Play some sort of like Russian 19th century version of it, or it's been adapted.
Absolutely.
With Telly Savalas.
Broadway musical. No, I don't know. It's taking too much time to find this.
But it's important. We can have time.
Nothing but time. Let's see. Annie. The classic hit Broadway musical. Enter Google.
Wiki that shit.
It's based on a 1924 comic strip, Little Orphan Annie by Harold Gray. I did not know that. Which was based off a poem.
Oh. James Joyce?
The original play actually came out in 77.
Okay, so then it got turned into a movie within like a probably in its first year.
Yeah, which was
probably made it into a movie. Yeah. Okay. This is a lot more information about Annie than I've ever wanted to know, but thank you, John. It's relevant. Right. Yes.
And coming in at number 2 for Tigers Are Not Afraid, a dark alternate Shazam take.
Yeah.
And coming in at number 1, an alternate title for Tigers Are Not Afraid, Cats Don't Give a Shit.
Yes. Yep, exactly. So I suggested we watch this movie because Issa Lopez is currently in the middle of her True Detective Night Country. I am blown away by it, and I know that this is her feature debut, so I wanted to go back and check it out. And it's also a movie that I've always wanted to watch again that you have seen, but so usually, if people don't know, like, we tend to just pick movies we haven't seen, but now that we've year 4, we've been a little looser with that rule, so yeah, you have seen this
because we can't deny a well-made movie, and it was also suggested per our dear friend Edwin Mendoza.
No last names.
That is his full name, first name, I think.
That's not
it. What we call him.
Yeah.
It's like people call me by my full name all the time. I mean, nobody knows my middle name, but it's just like normal for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like other cultures and not knowing how to address Mexicans. like our last name's going to make or break how we feel about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you think of the movie? I'd already said, like, I'm totally on board because I know this movie is gorgeous.
Yes, I loved it.
Yep.
I thought it was amazing. For a feature debut, absolutely amazing.
It is.
Wildly,
like the details are gorgeous.
There's a maturity to the filmmaking. For a first timer, there is a sophistication, if I say so. Like, there's an understanding, and the fact that a lot of these kids have no prior acting experience.
Oh, and they look
like real kids. Yeah, they look like genuinely just real Hispanic kids from Mexico. I mean, there's just, and that authenticity and the cinematography. And I love the sort of twist of the dark fairy tale, while set against brutal brutality of modern day Mexico. So it deals with like poverty, it deals with like you know, drugs, and it deals with like kids. There's a great little title card in the beginning about the war on drugs, how many people have died, how they haven't even counted the kids. It's estimated how many kids actually died, which is a great jumping off point for the movie. I was really struck because by the kids themselves. I thought were beautifully portrayed, and it reminded me so much of The Young and the Damned, the Benoit movie, where he kind of did something similar.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of parallels between the Benoit's The Young and the Damned and Tigers Are Not Afraid. And of course, Benoit is also like the father of surrealist cinema. So there was a little, and he created a movie in Mexico about poverty kids and kind of like did the same thing. So there's definitely like some parallels there with a little bit of a, it's hard not to talk about horror in Mexico without talking about Guillermo del Toro. I think he's kind of the father of Mexican cinema. Yeah. There's other filmmakers and stuff like that, but he seems to be the one that has truly transcended and it's like gotten into the mainstream here in America and in Mexico. And I feel like there's a lot of his stuff influenced. I can see his influences as well in this movie. And it definitely, I love that it shows the, you know, they show the really like horrific side of violence that goes on. And I felt like the opening scene specifically was, I think that, wasn't there a video? It kind of feels like something that became a popular video maybe about 10 years ago about, I think it happened in Mexico, where there was shooting going on, but then the teacher still was teaching in class or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this? You do?
Vaguely.
Vaguely, yeah. They just like, that's literally how this movie opens, very similarly, hauntingly, that kids are going about their day or whatever, school day, and then there's like shooting going on outside, and gets into the classroom, and yeah, and it kind of reminded me of that video. I think it was in Mexico or South America. It became a very popular video of the time. It was like CNN was airing it and stuff like that. So
yeah, I mean,
and I think that's feels like exactly the jumping off point.
Yeah, not exactly the same. No. I was going to say something else. Not
okay,
exactly
go
the same, but during 9/11, when that was happening, my geometry teacher, he was kind of a tool, but he was like, nah, we don't need to be seeing this right now. We need to be learning. And it's like, yeah, all us kids are definitely paying attention now, you fucking idiot. So he turned off the TV, even though we were fully aware of what was going on because of our first period class. He's like, nah, we don't need to see that. You guys need to learn. And it's like, we're not paying attention, dude. And then he got frustrated with us. And it's just like, I can only imagine these kids going through that, but there's an actual shooting going on outside, and they're just like, we're not learning right now. This isn't helping anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I did, see if I can remember this. I think that we were, yeah, I think they let us go after half a day. What about you? Did you go after?
No.
By lunch? They, you stayed the whole
kept us,
class?
Yeah. They kept us the entire day.
I think they dismissed everybody, but I think they basically told them like, you could stay if you don't have a ride, but if you could leave, just go. It's fine. We're not going to hold you to it. And I do remember, I think he was a history teacher. He did have the TV on and was showing it. We're talking about it, but then he got into like, immediately got into conspiracy theories about it blowing up within hours of it happening. He's like, already the internet was already creating the mass conspiracy theories about bombs being blown up inside of it.
There's at least 3 per every 5 people, you know, it's gonna happen.
Literally within hours of this horrible tragic thing, people were already conspiring about it.
Chemtrails. No, just kidding.
Chemtrails, yeah. Anyways, yeah, like the authenticity of it was amazing, beautifully handled by Issa Lopez, and
I was gonna say it's important to point out that our main protagonist, what was her name?
Estrella.
Yeah, Estrella Star was like on the ground, right? And the teacher gives her these 3 little trinkets that are like different little animals, saying like each of these are 3 wishes to kind of distract her, you think. But then it seems like these wishes are real.
Mm-hmm.
But then I have like a theory, but I don't know. I'm probably thinking too much into it.
They had to have like a 3 wishes type of thing, but they all like have consequences.
Yes.
2 of them. So, and it's definitely played to be like, is it real? Is it not real? Because of how it plays out, stuff like that. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty heavy movie, but very beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, for instance, like her first wish, she's wishes her mother to come back. I guess her mother hasn't returned home in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And so therefore her first wish is to bring her back her mom, but she soon finds out that the mom is dead, and the mom that actually shows up back at the house is a ghost spirit thing.
Yeah, in like a body bag, right? Or like wrapped up in something. I don't know, body bag's probably not accurate. Like wrapped up in like Visqueen or like a painter's plastic.
You're right. Which kind of ties, actually, I didn't catch that, but yeah, it actually ties to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So that gets her out of the house, and then we are introduced to like the little gang of kids
led by Elshin Shine.
Shine. Yeah.
Yeah, they all have like Moro, Tuxie, Pop. Oh, wait. And then we get the bad guys. What were they called?
Wasettas, I think.
Yeah. Were they something like that?
They're scared of the cartel.
Yes. I don't remember. But I was trying to see if maybe it was somewhere in this thing, and all I got was this was number 8 in Guillermo del Toro's top films of 2017.
He's wrong about that, but I'm just kidding. Wrong! Guillermo del Toro. I also want to point out the kid that played Shine. Man, this kid has a look to him. He's sort of like the second lead, you know? Like,
yeah.
He's definitely kind of the co-star, and he definitely is like, has a look to him. He's like looks like a street kid. He looks generally like kids.
I was gonna say there's something very adult about him already.
Yes. The way he spoke, the way he presented himself, he definitely was like the leader of the group.
Like he had to be tough, even though these are like children. I don't think we've really pointed out that these are like between the ages of like 9 and younger, right? Except for Estrella is probably a little bit older.
Yes.
And even then she's maybe like 11 or 12 or something. I don't know.
Right. Children. Real children. So and
for them, because I did read that they had zero acting experience, it's very impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they only had what is it? They were given like improvisation classes or workshops.
Yeah, just like little light stuff. Like they had to learn like Breck and Udaho.
The masters.
what's the main one everybody needs to get? The actor prepares. What's the name of that guy? He was a Chekhov. No, not Chekhov.
Chekhov. They force us to read Chekhov.
Yeah. I don't remember.
What was that play called? The Dollhouse.
Yeah, Dollhouse.
Everybody has to read The Dollhouse.
Including these kids. And that's why they were so good.
That's why they're so good. That's why he had the gun. That's where the gun comes from.
Oh, that's right.
Chekhov's gun. Damn.
Lisa Lopez. Hard hitting. But yeah, I guess that's a part of like the, I would argue that the cold open is Estrella dealing with that school shooting, or the shooting outside of the school, I mean, and Shine stealing the gun and the cell phone from, what's his name? El Chino, right? Was that the guy's character's name?
Something like that.
Yeah.
The two antagonists, unfortunately, both have C names. Was it
Kakon? Kaka. Just kidding. I mean, I think you're right. I think it's Kakao. And then El Chino.
El Chino. Kakao.
Played by Tenoch Huerta, who, you know, is famous for being Namor in Black Panther.
Oh! That's true. I just put that together. He didn't even look like what he looks like now, I'll be honest.
No.
And it's only been more than 5 years, I guess so.
Yeah. Unfortunately, somebody that got Me Too'd, right? I think recently.
Yes, he's canceled. Yep. Yeah. He did some kind of violence towards women or something.
Yeah.
Well,
keeps living up to these rules. Yeah, so what is important to note?
What did you think of the...
Oh, he keeps the cell phone and he keeps using it. He keeps it on, and it's like he shouldn't, because obviously they can track that, right? Because the bad guys want to keep it. And he really, really wants to kill Cacao or Caco or however you say his name, right? He really, really wants to kill him, and you don't really understand why, but you can assume it's because his mother.
The what? Spoiler.
Well, no, because that seems to be the through line for all these kids.
Yes, they're all missing parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're are victims of the drug wars.
Yeah, which I just assume that they're all dead because if you grew up in South Texas, you just assume all these people are going to be dead. Right. So immediately I just had that assumption. Like, oh, these kids, that's why this kid hates this guy. Or these people in general.
Yes. Yeah. They don't really get into why they're doing it. Other than just sort of they're doing it.
Something that happens in Mexico.
And the kids... I was gonna ask you, what do you think of the supernatural sort of... because these kids definitely have like big imaginations, I guess, is kind of how I would describe it, about how things are.
Yes, like they're trying to see the lighter side of everything because they're kids. I think the only one that sees things for what they are is Estrella.
Right.
Maybe because she's a little bit older. I mean, I also have a theory. But she seems to have some sort of like second sight.
Right.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed all that. I mean, I specifically enjoyed all the street art, the graffiti that was kind of representing what was going on, but through parallels with tigers, and it's always drawn like a kid did all this graffiti, which I thought was pretty cool.
That I think it's implied that Shine is the one doing it, right? He's like obsessed with the tiger.
Yes. Then there's because he keeps trying to convince the youngest kid, like, hey, tigers aren't afraid, so you gotta be like the tiger, and gives him the plush tiger toy, or the kid has a plush toy. And I thought it was interesting to see that his brother's still alive. Like, is that his brother? Like, some of these kids have siblings that don't want to hang out with them, and they're like teen versions or whatever, and they have their own little gang.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, that there's just broken up families, and everybody's on their own, looking out for themselves.
Yeah, there's specific instances where like they did capture some kids and released them, but those kids, there's a set of other kids that come in where they're related to the one of them, at least, is related to that older teenage group street gang.
Yeah, that lives in like the subway or tunnel.
Yeah, like bridge or something. Yeah,
they blow up a piano for fun.
That was a cool shot. Didn't make sense, but it was a cool shot.
There's something very... They wanted to keep it very Neverland Kids-esque. Like, is...
Okay, yeah, like...
The Lost Boys style.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of like post... I mean, this is kind of over-explained description, but like post-apocalyptic almost, you know, like...
Yes. Yeah, because their living situation is like on top of a building, and they just made their own little shanty town.
Right, yeah.
They pretend and it's like a clubhouse, but it's clearly just trash.
Yeah, there's very little like people or idea of there's a city going on. But it's beautifully captured, I thought. The cinematography, I thought, was wonderful in this movie as well, should I point out.
Yeah.
Not very showy, but very beautifully... constructed shots in each thing, where they really showed like the landscape of Mexico, and then you know, off the building, and then like some of the other, all the other shots inside, when they get into like some other set locations, I thought were really well executed as well.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I was trying to see if they had like a specific city, but it's just general Mexico, I guess, is the idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's smart, because then it's kind of like, you know, they can...
This could happen anywhere.
This could happen, it's like you said, like Lost Boys, like they live in this kind of makeshift areas and stuff like that. poverty, yeah. but like they lived in, you know, these types of sets
Santa
and stuff.
Carla.
Santa Clarita.
Santa, was it Santa Cruz? Was it Santa Carla? No, Santa. Yeah, Santa Carla.
I think it is Santa Carla, yeah. Basically, it looks like 1980 Santa Carla and Lost Boys. If nobody knows we're talking about the Lost Boys.
Talk about the Joel Schumacher classic.
Yeah, Schumacher classic, yeah. Which we reviewed last year. So yes, I guess 2 years ago, if you always want to check it out. Alrighty. Do you want to get into some spoilers?
Let's do it, yeah.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers! I have a theory.
Okay.
I think Estrella... and this is, I know, kind of far-fetched, but died from stray bullets at the beginning. And she is kind of just like unwittingly the angel of death for this group of kids and for these guys as well. Because she's guiding everybody to where they need to be unintentionally. Well, I mean, kind of intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And then gives them like a beautiful sort of, as much as she can, life when they break into that building towards the end to make their new home, with that really pretty symbolic area where it's I mean, kind of like big fish in a little pond, but also these beautiful koi fish that got kind of flooded onto the first floor of this abandoned building, and they're just in there. And I thought it was interesting because they don't die, they're just there, and there's no reason for them to be alive, but it's this beautiful little moment. So there was something very magical about that. And then the way it ends also yeah. made me think that. But that's why I just assume she doesn't understand she is, but she's like the angel of death for these children. And also, yeah, I don't know, the guys that need to get their comeuppance.
I think you're right. I think that does track. I definitely see the logic behind it, because it definitely... the only thing I was slightly disagree with, I think these kids are dead. I think these kids are dead already. I think they're all dead. I think this is purgatory, right? Like a purgatory-ish mm-hmm. idea. And she kind of moves... She moves on, though these street kids... die here, right?
Yeah,
that's kind of what I gathered. And I think it does make sense, because in the very first title cards reveals that like they don't know how many kids are dead. No kids died, and there's only really kids in this sort of area, right, for the most part, besides the bad guys.
Oh, I mean, I took that as they can't account for them because they can't find them, right? And it's because they have run away and they're hiding from society.
That, yeah, I can see. Yeah, that's true too. And like, there's definitely like a play in surrealism where like when people die, they don't really die; they become yes. ghostly, and Estrella is able to see them. So, like Shine dies sadly, and so does what's his name, Mortal. Mortal yeah, also dies. The little cute kid. Yeah, I kind of knew that was coming when he was the little. We first see him asleep in the little TV with the plush, and I was like, "That kid's gonna die." So I prepared myself emotionally to handle it later in the movie. So
yeah, that was a hard-hitting one. I mean, he did shoot some guy. He did try to save, because there's plenty of moments for Shine and Estrella were about to get killed,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which is why I'm like, I think it's interesting because. Anytime you think like, oh, Estrella's about to die, it just seems like something gets in the way, and it seems like, oh, what a coincidence, but I don't think it ever was.
Yeah. And I think that I think it's also could be noted that Shine does kind of call it too, where she says that Estrella's like, all girls are bad luck.
Oh,
yeah. And pretty much destroys this pretty, you know, this gang of kids, pretty well, like, organized gang of kids. And
It does make sense that they're together, though. It's I don't know if there's like a play on, like, his name is Cheyenne, her name is Star.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And
but you see how, like, every single movement she does, even though it seems like it's orchestrated by these dead ghosts or whatever, push her to where exactly she needs to be. So all these mm-hmm. missing bodies, all of a sudden she stumbles upon all of them. And, but only her, right? Like, only she seems to know exactly where things are at. And then when Moro dies, where she knows exactly what's happening to the body and where they're at, and they're like, oh, you talked to him? So yeah, I did. I mean, two of the kids get to survive, as far as we know.
Yeah, so some of the other lesser focused on kids, yeah, do survive.
Yeah. Get on a bus, leave.
Dogs. Yeah, I think that's a good reading on it. I think she, because a lot of the more supernatural things, like the tiger at the end, the seeing of ghosts, there's like a blood trail that kind of follows them, which we assume is that she sees at some point.
Yes.
Well, even that from the very beginning when we first see it, it kind of wraps itself around the house and she sees it, and it kind of consistently, anytime it shows up, it's kind of related to the other dead people that these cartel members killed. So, and she does see all of them as well. And it's even the ghosts are speaking to her. So yes. It's almost like there's, it could be that she's dead and these kids are alive, right? Or like dealing with them.
And I think there's other like very subtle hints, but there's a point where Shine steals the other guy's phone, and you find out the only reason he keeps the other guy's phone is because the last photo that he has of his mother, the only photo he has of his mother, happens to be these shitty gang members right before they, like, you know, whatever they did to her and then shot her. He took a photo of her. So the only thing he has is like a photo of her right before she gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he keeps the phone, which is shitty because that's how they're tracking him.
Right.
But then when he grabs the other phone and it's like everything they thought they knew was kind of wrong. They get extra footage of other stuff and like people getting killed and including her mom, I think. Right.
Right.
I think that's what that was. And then mm-hmm. he says, like, it's like not everything's what it seems, actually. And I think that was pretty close to him realizing, like, hey, I don't think, like, she's not actually there, but they can all see her. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, she was very well protected by something supernatural.
Yeah. And we can either take it on its, you know, on its face and just sort of see it as a movie that's happening, or we can read a little bit more, like you said. I think that is true. I think that we could interpret, I think enough is there to interpret that the little girl is dead and like she's kind of helping you know, react some sort of vengeance for the people that died.
Yes,
kind of the end theme.
Because when she finds all the missing, like a good chunk of the missing bodies, and a lot of them, I'm assuming, are the parents of these kids.
Right.
They all happen to be in an area that is flammable or something like that in the building that they broke into.
Mm-hmm.
And she's able to trick the last guy, I think it's Namor. I think it's that actor, into being in there, and she, even though it looks like she gets shot several times, like nothing happens to her, there's like a few moments where I'm like, is she okay? And I had to rewind and I was like, no, that's right, like she's, I think, okay. And then she sees Shine, and Shine is already dead because Shine gets shot in the head while they're talking, and he like ghostly sets the thing on fire, right? And right. Then she walks away and she sees the tiger, the door is open to what's supposed to be Mexico. And it's a field of flowers, like it's, she's passing on or something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That is a good reading on that. Yeah. Or it could be that she's now the princess. It could be the Pan's Labyrinth.
That's true, passing on.
It's very Pan's Labyrinth too, by the way. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but it's kind of hard to have you know, this magical realism on top of Mexican horror about a girl. So it's doing three wishes, fantasy, fairy tale.
You try to do anything fairy tale like, yeah, it's going to seem.
You're going to get comparisons. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to get comparisons to Guillermo del Toro. So fantastic movie. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts?
No, just I think Issa perfectly captured innocence and evil on the same movie. Kind of like Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, less fish fucking in this movie, though. So
I know. That's probably why I'm going to give it like a 3 rating, but we'll see.
We'll see. The Spitz is killing me. All right. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Tigers Are Not Afraid 9 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel too. 9 sexy spooky bones. If you're not watching the new season of True Detective, get on that shit. It's fucking great. John.
Which I'm not, I got suckered into Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
It's also, I hear, equally good. So, but True Detective's great. Anyways, all right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.